On behalf of the Saber Oral History Project, I'm Steve Jaremko. This is part two of my interview with Elroy Face, conducted at his home in North Versailles, Pennsylvania on September 15, 2019.
Talked a lot of this already. Okay, so now we're getting into 1963, and this was kind of a key year for the Pirates. They started losing a lot of their key players. Dick Groat, Dick Stewart, Don Hoke left the team. And then people were coming in, new people like Bob Veal, Don Cardwell, Don Schwall, Al McBean, Jim Pagliarone, Bob Bailey, Jerry Lynch.
Schwall and Pagliarone for Stewart.
Yes.
With the Cubs.
Red Sox.
So
there was a lot of changes. That did you feel at that time that the team had to, had to go through this change? What was your feelings about the team?
Well, we didn't have much feeling about it. I mean, all you do is hear about so and so leaving and somebody else coming in, and it's just because of the off year we had after the 60 series. It was nobody indispensable.
Sure. Well, in 63, the Pirates, they dropped down to eighth, and then they started rebuilding after that. And
yes,
that year, you had to seem like you still were very, very effective in 63. In 64, this year was a little bit rocky. You had 5.2 ERA, and you just wasn't a good year for you. And then 65, you started.
Then that's when a hitter started hitting me.
Well, you found out whatever it was, you fixed it. So coming in at that time was Steve Blass. He came in that
Steve
year.
Steve Blass came in, yeah.
Yeah, and Manny Mota and Gene Alley. Now they used Dick Schofield. When Dick Groat left, they used Dick Schofield as the primary shortstop, and then until Gene Alley came.
Alley came, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it seemed like in 65, the team...
But when Hoke, yeah, and Matt and Hoke and Groat, still had Maz, but when Hoke and Groat, that took away a lot of our defense.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because they were good defensive players.
Sure. I wanted to talk about those guys, and maybe I didn't want to skip over them, but if you could you talk a little bit about, Maz, Dick Groat, and Don Hoke?
Infield. Maz, probably the greatest second baseman ever put a uniform on. I mean, he never caught a ball. He's got a hole in his glove, and the ball would just hit his glove. He'd have his hand here, it ricocheted off his glove. He never caught the ball. It would just hold his hand there and catch the ball in his bare hand and throw it. That's how he was so quick. I mean, he was that good. And Groat didn't have the range, but he played the hitters, and so he was there when the ball was hit. And Hoke at third base, couldn't hardly beat him. He had good hands, good defense. He had a double play against Yogi Berra in a World Series. The ball was, like a one-hopper to his left. He got it. Went over, tapped on third, and threw to first, got a double play out of it. But they're just three good defensive ball players. And like I said, Groat didn't have the range like Stewart, Hoke or Maz, but he played the hitters. He was always in position. When the ball was hit, he was usually where it was hit,
Yeah.
And now you see these guys today, they got thing in their pocket, and they want to... They got written where the guy hits now, and they check to see where they're supposed to play him and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And the catcher's got thing on his sleeve. He look at see what type of hitter that's up there. If he's a fastball hitter, curveball hitter. They do all that stuff today. We never did that before.
So they didn't really know their players then? Because they have to write it down? They didn't really know?
Well, now...
That's what I mean.
They write it down. You see a catcher, he's got the thing, and he checks on it. When a hitter comes up to bat, he'll check just and see what type of hitter it is. Is he a fastball hitter or curveball hitter or whatever? And the outfielders, you see them, they'll pick it, reach out of their pocket, and they'll get book out or paper or something, and they'll look when a certain hitter comes up where they're going to play the guy.
Yeah.
But you guys didn't have to do that.
No.
You knew.
The coaches always told you to move over or do whatever, you know. But the guys usually knew the hitter and they knew where to play him. You know, they don't have to read a piece of paper where to play him.
Did you guys all have team meetings like before you would play a series with a team?
The starting pitcher, every series, the starting pitcher would go over the lineup and say how he's going to pitch him and that's it. The other two pitchers that were pitching in that series didn't have no meeting. Just the first guy had a meeting and go over the guys and see. They'd say where the guy usually hits the ball or stuff like that. And the other guys, they know it. They can hear talking about it where he hits the ball. So,
So in 65, now we had there was another change of manager. Danny Murtaugh left. And Harry Walker
took over, yeah.
And then that year you had an off year because you were injured.
I tore a cartilage in my knee. And I was out from May till September.
Was that something was playing related? Or
no, I was in the outfield shagging balls, and the guy hit a ball, and I went to run after it, and I tore the cartilage.
That sounds awful. You still put a pretty good year, and you were 2.66 ERA, 5-2. Jose Pagan came on that year as a utility infielder, replaced Dick Schofield as a utility man. And tell us a little about Harry Walker as a manager.
Harry Walker didn't think a pitcher was part of a ball club. He always worried about hitting. That's all he worried about. And the pitchers were just guys that took up space on the club.
Well, he got Matty Alou, you know, he instructed
well,
him.
Well, he got credit for it.
He got credit for it. Was that mess up Matty did on his own, you think? Or?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I guess probably Harry helped him some, but But Harry was strictly a hitter's manager. He wasn't pitcher. He didn't know much about.
So in 66, the Pirates actually made a run for the pennant that year.
Yeah.
As I recall, that was the year Bob Prince had the green weenie.
I'll tell you about Harry Walker. We're in San Francisco. I come in to relieve. Marichal is pitching against us. And I come in to relieve in the ninth inning. Bottom of the eighth, I got one out. There was two outs, and I got one out in the bottom of the eighth, so it goes into the ninth. And we don't score. It's a tie ball game. We don't score. Their first hitter I got out. The next hitter was, what was his name? Little outfielder, pinch hitter for the Giants. Left-handed hitter. He put him in to hit. I pitched to him and he pops up. Two outs. Now Marichal is the hitter. The second pitch, he hits out of the ballpark for a home run and beats me to ball game. We're walking off the field. Marshall says to me, he says, "Did you see Harry?" "No. Pellegrini. Pagliarone." He said to me, "Did you see Harry?" I said, "No, why?" He says, "When they put that left-hander in to hit, Harry was halfway to the third baseline. He didn't call time. He just halfway to the third baseline to take me out of the ballgame. And when he popped up, Harry went back and sat down on the bench because the pitcher's next hitter." And Marichal hit the home run.
Wow, that's funny. So in 66, they made a pretty good run. Pirates came in third. Steve Blass was on the team. Pete Nicholson they got from New York for Bob Friend, I think. Billy O'Dell and Bob Pricky. Before we leave Bob Friend, I wanted to ask you a little bit about him. We hadn't talked about
Bob Friend. I don't know how many years he got in the big leagues, but it never missed a start his whole career. Every fourth day he started. Never missed a start. In, I don't know, 15 years or whatever he had in big leagues.
There was an interview, I listened to him, and he was the player rep at the time when they were coming in, and boy, it sounds like that was a difficult period for the players, and a lot of uncertainty.
But
He was a steady, very consistent.
Oh yeah, he was, put like a lot of innings in. Every 4th day he started.
You know,
never had a bad arm or nothing.
One of the things that's misleading about when you look at somebody's records, win and loss, one loss records, that Bob Friend was an outstanding pitcher.
Yeah,
record wouldn't show that.
No,
necessarily, but he was.
Well, he pitched a lot of bad ball clubs.
He did. That's right.
A lot of bad teams.
Sure.
He wasn't with the Yankees or, you know,
right
at that time, or the Cardinals or the Cubs. They all had good ball clubs. Giants.
So Giants. There was a former Giant, Billy O'Dell, was of the club that
Billy
year.
O'Dell, a
Bob Purkey for the last part of his career before he retired.
He what?
Bob Purkey came on the '66 Pirates.
Yeah, after he went to Cincinnati, yes, he came back over here. Yeah.
Yes.
He came back over here. Yeah.
So in '67, Harry Walker was fired, and Danny Murtaugh came back to finish the season. And that's the year the Pirates had Murray Wills was on the Pirates end,
yeah,
a shortstop, and Juan Pizarro was in the bullpen.
You sure Shepard wasn't the manager?
Larry Shepard came after. It looks like Danny Murtaugh came in just to end that season. You're right. Larry Shepard came in '68, and that was the last year that you were with the Pirates.
Yeah.
So, and then that year, you had really good years, 67, well, really, 66, 67, and 68. You had really very, very good years.
Joe Brown was still general manager.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. So in 68, they had Jim Bunning on the team then.
Jim Bunning, yeah.
And he didn't do so well for the Pirates that year.
Well, I guess he was on his way down.
Yeah, he was 4-14.
He was with the Phillies. He was good.
He was very good. So Bob Moose was coming in.
Bob Moose, yeah, just rookie coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, and they had Doc Ellis was coming in.
Ellis.
And Ron Klein came back.
Ronnie Klein came back.
Yeah.
And back with me.
So.
Him and I had hunting camp together.
Yeah.
Ronnie Klein. I did his, like I said, I did build his bar for him, but we used to go hunting together and well, Hoke and him and I, we had a hunting camp up in Potter County.
Yeah. Well, Don Hoke was from sort of that area, wasn't he? Roulette?
Yeah, Roulette, yeah.
Now, in 68, could you tell us about your last game as a Pirate in 68?
I relieved Blast in the first inning. he was going to start the game, and then Shepard, after he pitched to one batter, they put that was his catcher. He had a bad foot. He wasn't playing then. He was on the bench.
Jerry May?
No. But anyway, they put him in start left field.
Okay.
Because Blass was going to start the game. Shepard, after one hitter, comes out, tells Blass to go to left field. Takes the left fielder, goes back and sits down, the catcher, and put me in to pitch. I pitched to one batter. He come back out, called time, brought Blast back in, and said, go in the clubhouse. Joe Brown wants to see you. So I went to the clubhouse, and he told me I was traded. But before that, one of the usher during batting practice said to me, he just came down from the athletic club, he said, you're going to Detroit, told me. So I got the word before Joe Brown called me in the clubhouse. And
so when you pitched, you knew?
Well, that guy had told me that I was going to Detroit, but I knew there was a reason for me coming in the first inning after one batter.
Yeah.
You know, so I could tie Walter Johnson's record of 802 games
with one club. Yes.
So Joe Brown did that for me anyway.
Yeah.
But I went to the clubhouse and he told me I was going to Detroit. So I went over there and finished the season with them.
Yeah, so, we're...
I got in 2 ball games and had a total of 1 inning in a month.
How come they didn't use you more
often? 13 straight complete games. So I wasn't eligible for the World Series because I didn't go there before the 1st September. It was the 1st of September.
The Tigers, that year in 68... The Tigers went to the World Series.
Yeah. And they beat the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. They won it.
Yeah. So one inning of pitching in the two games in the Tigers.
In a month.
So then you went to spring training with the Tigers afterwards.
Yeah, and then they released me to spring training. And I went to New York. This fellow I knew had a candy business. And I went to New York to see about opening a store here. And I got a call from Chuck Feeney, the writer. He said, Gene Mock wants to see you, because Montreal was playing here in Pittsburgh. So I got a plane, I came back, went right to the ballpark in the airport, and went out in the bullpen, and I threw some pitches. Mock says, I can use you in Montreal.
Yeah.
So that's how I went to Montreal.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, then at that time, Montreal Expos was an expansion team. It was their first year in the National League.
I am the oldest living Montreal Expo right now. Right now.
Wow.
That's great. So how did you like Gene Mock as a manager?
He was good. He put me in one time, bases loaded in the first inning, nobody out. I got out of the inning, they scored one run, and I got out of the inning, and he put a pinch hitter in for me. And after the game, he called me in. He says, you know what I did? I says, I have an idea. He says, you can save a game for me in the first inning as well as you can in the ninth. He said, you only give up one run. He said, they got three or four runs. We got four or five to beat them. He said, we only needed two, you know, to win. So that's the only time I was in the first inning, other than when Blass was started.
Yeah.
But Blass got a... Finished. He started the game, finished it, didn't get a complete game because I pitched that one out.
Oh, sure. But he was in left field, so he came back and pitched.
Yeah.
Before we leave Steve Blass, what was your opinion of him as a pitcher?
He was probably one of the better ones they had at that time until he lost his control, and nobody knows what happened there. Who knows?
Yeah.
I think maybe it may have been his brother-in-law, because in spring training, his brother-in-law got hit in the face with the ball.
John Lamb?
Yeah, it's his brother.
Your brother-in-law.
Yeah. And I think maybe Blass, living through that, was afraid, not consciously, but subconsciously, afraid of throwing the ball over the plate if he was going to hit. Because he lived with it. You know, his brother-in-law, he lived with it all that winter.
Mm. You know, we interviewed Jim Cott last week, and he won 16 gold gloves in the American League, and one of the balls he had his teeth marks in it. He got hit in the face with the ball, and Vic Power brought the ball over. He says, you want a souvenir? And he still has that ball.
And his teeth were still in the ball.
In the ball, yeah. The Expos, they had some young players at the time, Rusty Staub,
and Bateman, catcher.
You were Bob Bailey was on that team
Bob
again.
Bob Bailey,
yeah. So tell us about
Coco LaBoy,
yeah. So tell us, how was the experience playing for the Expos after all those years with the Pirates?
Well, it was a new experience because it's a new franchise. Yeah. So, but we didn't do very well, but. The stands were full all the time. I mean, being a new franchise and everything is, but it was old Jury Park.
Park Jury, they called it. Yeah.
Or Park Jury.
Yeah.
And
well, how did you like playing in Forbes Field? I wanted to ask you that.
That was great. Yeah. I mean, it was a big ballpark.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, well, they had that batting cage. They stored it in center field, and it never came into play. Maybe once or twice in 15 years I was there. That ever come into play. I mean, at 457 feet dead center, Stewart's the only one that ever hit the ball out past the light pole, by the flagpole, 457.
Wow. I didn't know that. I thought Willie Stargell did.
Stargell hit a couple over the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Over the roof in right field, but dead center field, 457. Stewart's the only one ever hit one.
Oh.
Manley hit one over the 436 in right center, batting right-handed.
Yeah.
And Burden in the World Series. Burden said that ball had to be 50 foot high when it left the ballpark.
Mickey Mantle, was he better right-handed or left-hand hitter, do you know?
Probably better right-handed. I mean, left-handed.
Yeah.
Probably. Well, had that short porch in Yankee Stadium,
oh,
too.
Oh, sure. So, this part of the interview is an overview of your career, because we've discussed your playing. It says, how did you realize you reached the end of your playing career? Well, I know you said you went to Hawaii for the 1970 season.
Yeah, well, after I was released in Montreal, and Mark called me in, and he said, we got some young pitchers we want to look at. That's when they can bring them up from the minor leagues. And he said, you can retire on your own, or he said, we can release you. I said, well, if you release me, you got to pay me a month's salary. If I retire, I don't get it. So I said, you can release me. So they did. And then Tanner was in Hawaii, and they contacted me about coming over there. So I signed with them to go over there the next year. But when it come time to go, I was in a bar business here in Pittsburgh, throwing bat practice for the Pirates, so I didn't show up for spring training. So they suspended me. So then I'm throwing bat practice. Clemente said, you still play, throw pretty good. He says, I'm going to manage in Puerto Rico this winter. You come down and play for me. I says, I can't. I'm suspended. Oh. And he said, well, call them, see if they let you go. So I called over to Hawaii, and they said, well, come over and finish the season here, and then you'll be ready to go down there. So I went over to Hawaii and finished the season with them. Then Clemente never called me about going to Puerto Rico.
Well, what was it like playing in Hawaii?
Well, just like playing anywhere else. Oh, okay. I mean, it's a ball game.
Well, I mean, just to travel, you know.
We flew. We didn't swim.
Okay. Did you consider staying in baseball as a scout or coaching or managing?
No. I didn't play, like I said, I didn't do anything. I didn't follow baseball or didn't have any favorite players or nothing until I was 16 years old in high school. I started playing. And I went out for the team, made it, and pitched for 2 years. We won a championship the second year I pitched.
How did you keep yourself in fit during the off season? You
working in the woods, cutting logs and pulpwood.
I would do it. So if you were to look at the span of your career, how would you say your pitching changed from 1955 to 69?
Well, the relief pitching is all I can tell you. They go one inning now.
But, I mean, your pitching arsenal didn't change that time. I mean, you didn't add your pitching style was pretty much the same over that period?
Well, from 51, I played with Eddie Bershew. Bershew.
Oh, yeah, shortstop.
He was with a Giant organization. Yeah. He came up, and I was pitching for the Pirates, and he made a statement. He thought it was a different pitcher because when I played in the minor leagues, I was sidearm, everything. Then I come up here, I went overhands, and he didn't look like the same pitcher, he said.
Yeah, that was my question. How did your pitching motion change? So you covered that. What would you say was? Did you have any single game in your career that you stands out as the most memorable? Or a single memory of the whole? Maybe
well,
could be a whole season.
It would have to be probably one of the World Series. Yeah. Couple games that I saved in Yankee Stadium.
Sure. So, like, yeah, game five.
Because the other team, they were always scoring 15, 18 runs. And we're getting three or four.
That was amazing. Yeah. So, I'm going to ask you about your all-time teams. And these are people that you played with or against, people during your playing career. And what I'd like to ask you to do, Mr. Face, is give us two names so we can make up a team.
Mr. Face was my father. I'm Elroy.
Thank you, Elroy. So if you could give me two names for each of the positions, we'll have enough for two teams of your all-time team, of the one people you played with. So, for example, the first one would be catcher, so two catchers of your all-time team of you played with.
That's Hank Foyles. Maybe Dale Long at first.
Oh, Dale Long.
What do you want, two of each?
Well, it could be two of each. It could be also opposing teams. Just in the all the people you pitched against or for.
Oh.
Just anybody, you know, throughout your career. For example, like a catcher, you said Hank Foyles, and maybe another catcher. I don't know if you had, you know, Del Crandall or somebody like that, or...
There's so many of them.
Yeah, I know there is. There's a lot.
I guess probably, like you said, Del Crandall is a pretty good catcher.
And then first baseman?
Dale Long and Bill White.
Bill White, yeah. Second base.
Oh, Maz. And maybe...
Like a Red Shane Deist, or...
Yeah, Shane Deist is probably one. Charlie Neal, he's second baseman.
Shortstop.
Not because he got a base hit and broke my string, but he was a good defensive second baseman.
Shortstop.
Ernie Banks. Roy McMillan. He was good.
Third base.
Oh, I have to take Don Hope for one. And maybe Eddie Matthews.
Left fielder.
I don't recall a lot of left fielders.
Pirates had Bob Skinner.
Well, Skinner, yeah, the Skinner. Skinner wasn't real good defensive. Oh. I mean, he was a little bit slow. He wasn't real fast, you know. And, well, he had a decent arm. But, I don't know. Mays and Verdon at center.
Mm-hmm. Right field?
No. You have to have Clemente and... Bobby Allison, maybe?
Okay. Now, you know, I had designated hitter, but they didn't have that in the National League.
They had so what?
Designated hitter, they don't have in the National League. So, in your right-handed starting pitchers, two, and two left-handed pitchers, and then two relievers.
Warren Spahn, one, and Marichal has to be one. Robin Roberts. Robin Roberts.
Oh, Robin Roberts, yeah.
Right-hander.
Right-hander, yeah.
Maybe Preacher Rowe?
Wow, left-hander. Okay, yeah, yeah. So, two relievers? Lindy McDaniel and Roy Face.
Yeah,
there you go. That's a great list. Okay, so the next section is just an assessment of today's baseball. So I want to ask you, give us your impressions of today's game. The game how it's changed since your time.
It's changed. They don't. Today they got maybe one or two guys can hurt you. Well, some of the clubs got a couple of them, but back when we played, it was three or four guys in the lineup could really hurt you. I mean, if they were at 250, you didn't play in the big league back when we played. You got guys hitting 100 playing in the big league
now. So you feel that the talent's been diluted because of all that?
It certainly has, because there were only 16 teams. Now there's 30. So they got double-A players playing in the major leagues. But my biggest gripe is, like, these guys are getting saves. Like, day before yesterday, the Pirates lose to the Giants with a 14-2 or something like that, lopsided score. They have like a 10 or 12 run lead. The guy gets a save, you know. And back when we got saves, you had to face a tying or winning run, or they had to be on base in order to get a save. Now they can have a 3-run lead, get 3 outs, the tying player can be sitting on a bench and they get a save. Then if they go 1 inning, they can't pitch. 2 days in a row, they can't pitch again. We used to come in from the 7th inning on, and in order to get a save, you had to face a tying or winning run. So any of those saves I got there, we faced a tying or winning run to get them.
Right.
Or the wins, yeah, whatever.
They've changed that. It's a shame.
It's just and they've got a pitch count now.
Yes, I was going to, Mike, question is, what's
17
your opinion?
Innings one night. He had to throw over 200 pitches, 17 innings, in a tie ball game.
And so now they take them out when they hit 80 pitches?
And well, 100.
100,
they
yeah.
go to 100 maybe sometimes, but most of the time it's 80, 85 pitches are out of there.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you think complete games are a thing of the past?
Oh, yeah, sure. What the most anybody can get in a season is 2 or 3 now.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what is your opinion of the specialized roles in the pitchers? They have every bullpen position or starting position, they all have different roles.
Well, yeah, they set up guy, and the guy just comes in the first inning, or if the guy's in trouble, or I don't know, back then they just used whoever they was ready, you know. Then any specific guy for a certain, except for me, like, well, the 7th inning on, it was me, whether it was right-hander, left-hander, hitter, it was me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was then. Now they got a left-hander, right-hander.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how are managers using the bullpen differently today?
So
that pretty much answered that.
Because if it was a 7th inning on, it was me. I could lay down in the clubhouse till the 7th inning, and when the 7th inning come in, they'd come in and tell me, Elroy, you're up now. You know. Until we got Bobby Chance, after that, then he'd go to the left hand or right hand when he wanted him, you know. But.
With so much emphasis on home runs, do you see any prospect of returning to, like, dead ball tactics, the bunts and squeeze play and, you know, things
that... I doubt it. No, the guys are so big now and everything, and they're all swinging for home runs.
Is there any way to shorten the game, quicken the pace?
Yeah. Keep the batters in the batter's box instead of going out and walking clear out of the dirt onto the grass, out of the grass. Then they come back, and then they got to fix their gloves and everything. Don't wear no gloves. Just stay in the batter's box.
Jim Cott mentioned to us that he's broadcasting MLB games. And he said that he counted the time that was spent with the batters adjusting their gloves.
Yeah.
In a game, it was 25 minutes.
Yeah. Well, a pitcher's supposed to have 20 seconds between pitches.
Yeah.
There are not too many pitches 20 seconds apart.
Yeah. You know, Elroy, we go to the Binghamton Rumble Ponies games, and boy, they go, they're like this. I mean, there's...
Well, like I said, my first win, 144, an hour and 44 minutes.
Amazing. What do you think the salaries have done, the exorbitant salaries today's game?
It's outrageous. I mean, back when I first came up, it was $5,000 minimum. Now it's $580,000. You know, I know it's a lot different time, but I don't think there's that much difference in the salaries. You know, I don't think anybody. Well, what's the President of the United States get? $300,000 a year.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you're following in today's game?
None in particular. I just watched the Pirate games. No particular player.
So I wanted to ask you about your family a little bit. Tell us a little, if you will, about your family. You have how many children?
I have three
grandchildren.
Two daughters and a son. I get oldest daughter is married with three children. My son is married with four children. My youngest daughter married with no children, but she lives in the house that I lived in when I played ball. She bought that off her mother before her mother passed away.
So you have seven grandchildren.
I had seven grandchildren, and I don't know how many great grandchildren.
Oh, so do you see?
But I'm not with Vernon Law. Vernon Law's got 51 grandchildren. I mean, 31. 31 grandchildren.
Wow.
And 33 great grandchildren.
Oh, my gosh.
31 wow. grandchildren, 33 great grandchildren.
Wow.
We just saw him here at Mazeroski's golf outing this June. And when we were departing, he was going and I was leaving. I said to him, how many grandkids you got now? He said, I got 31 grandkids and 33 great-grandkids.
Did you go to the park?
He got to rent a hall for a Christmas party.
Do you go to the park to watch the games?
No. I get my little drink right here, my easy chair, and sit there and watch the game there.
I'd
I
love
don't
to
fight
sit
the crowd.
Watch a game
I don't
with
fight
you
the parking.
No.
And,
it would be great to sit and watch a ball game with you just to hear your comments. We talked about a little bit. Want to talk about your favorite hobbies and your outside interests. You say in the off seasons you worked as a carpenter during the baseball year and year after.
I retired as a carpenter from the state. I worked at Mabee State Hospital for 11 years. I was a carpenter foreman there.
That's awesome.
Mabee State Hospital. And from 59 to, 79 to... 90, 11 years I was a carpenter.
So you've always been good with your hands and good, skilled with tools and everything.
I did game rooms in the wintertime when I was playing ball. I'd probably did a game around the area. I did Mazeroski's basement and some other friends of mine. I did their game rooms and that.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I do quite a bit of home improvement too, so I really appreciate it. I love it. Tell us about your other hobbies and interests. I know you're an active golfer. You golf several times
a
week.
Yeah. I used to hunt and fish. Not much of that anymore, but just mostly golf now.
You had the Elroy Face golf tournament.
For the School for the Deaf.
For
19
Deaf.
Years, we had it out at Dick Groen's course.
Yeah. So are you still doing that?
No, they wouldn't have. Price of gas went up and everything. They lost some sponsors. Nobody wanted to drive that far. You know, it's 60 miles from here. Yeah. So nobody wanted to drive out there and back with the gas prices and all that. So they lost some sponsors and they just stopped having it.
We
raised $600,000 for them in 19 years.
That's outstanding.
For the School for the Deaf, yeah.
Yeah.
What was your interest in School for the Deaf?
Well, I was playing golf in an outing, and a fellow had his son there in school. He said to me, he says, would you like to have an outing in your name? Or I said, I don't know. He said, well, he was with the Special Olympics, but his son was there in School for Deaf, so he talked to the superintendent and told me to come over, and they asked me if I'd be interested in having a golf outing and use my name. I said, yeah, fine. You know, so that's what we did and had it for 19 years.
That's really great. That's wonderful. Are there any other charitable activities that you participated in?
Not really, no. They took preschool age kids. They have one house over there that they have everything miniature. All the stove and the bathrooms and everything is miniature, you know, just for these preschool age kids.
Yeah.
And they named that house Elroy Face House.
Right, right.
Schooled it. And now they sold it. I don't know what happened to the plaque they put up there, but they have an outing now here locally. that they invite me to every year, bring a foursome and play for nothing, you know. And then they had a dedication, they knew school for preschool kids, that they just had a dedication here a couple weeks ago, and they invited me over for that while they had the dedication of the new school they opened.
Mm. Sure.
But I get calls to them all the time with something going on. They have a an auction every October, and they invite me to that, you know.
Yeah. So,
excuse me, I'm going upstairs for a minute. If anybody has to go upstairs, restroom's upstairs.
Okay, great. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we're almost done. So you, this is great.
You want something to drink?
Well, oh, no, I got water here. Lindy?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
I got some orange cello.
Oh,
you're lemoncello? I like
to Yeah. Okay, I think the...
Is that okay? Have we outstayed our welcome?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, we... Okay, so...
Pirates are losing 3-0 in the first inning already.
Oh, they lost last night 14-1.
Yeah, I think you said it was 14-1.
This game today.
This
just started.
Oh, man.
They're losing 3-0 in the first inning already. Oh, two outs and man on.
Well,
go
okay.
Bucks.
Yeah, Bucks are going all the way. You know, I'd like to interview Joe Negri, too. I said I'd like to interview Joe Negri. He wrote a song.
Oh, Joe Negri.
He wrote
the Bucks are going all the way.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, we're at a section that's called Final Thoughts, and this is sort of just your philosophies in life and baseball. What do you believe is your most important contribution to the game of baseball?
God-given ability, I guess. Being able to do what I did.
Would you do anything differently if you had to do it all over again?
No, I don't think so. I might have stayed in longer.
Well, you got a late start, actually, with some of the ball players.
I was 25 when I come up, went back down for a year, come back at 27.
27, yeah.
But I didn't sign originally until I was 20 years old. I was 21 my first year in Class D ball.
Well, you spent time in the military.
That's 4 years. Yeah. Well, 4 years in the minors before I made the big leagues.
Right.
But like I said, the guy signed me. He says, I don't know if you make it or not because you're small, but he says, I'll give you a chance. So I took my chance.
What is your advice to aspiring ball players? Kids that want to play professional baseball.
Well, if you have that desire and you have the ability to stay with it.
Okay.
They'll let you know if you have the ability. You go to spring training, they'll let you know. Either you stay or you don't.
Yeah. Who was the most influential person in your life?
Probably my father. Or my mother, too, you know. I remember one time my father used to call square dances. He called Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday for $5. $15 to get a week. Mm-hmm. But I was only 9-10 years old. And we're going to Williamstown, Massachusetts one time, the college up there. He's going to call for a square dance on a Friday night. And he's supposed to be there at 9 o'clock. It was like probably a half hour, 40 minute drive. And it was almost 8:40. But he needed tobacco, didn't have tobacco, and he stopped at a store to get tobacco. Paid for the tobacco, we got up about a mile up the road, and he says, he gave me a nickel too much change. Turned around and went back and gave the guy the nickel back. He could have gone in the next day and give the nickel back.
No.
But he turned around, right? He was late anyway, but that showed me honesty.
Sure.
Yeah.
So
I could see how that would influence you.
Yeah. I mean, he could have kept the nickel, you know. Yeah. Turned around and went back and gave the nickel back.
Wow.
That influenced me quite a bit.
I can see that. No, I can see that. So, really, that's the end of it. I had one other question. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Talk about. I'd like to get the salaries you're getting now.
Oh, sure.
But, no, I'm satisfied with what I did. Wished I could have done it longer, but had 22 years of it, so I think it's adequate.
We as fans of yours were certainly glad to have you as part of our life. As a boy growing up here in Pittsburgh, I can't tell you just how much this means to me to see you.
I know
and talk to you
a lot of people say, boy, they tried throwing that forkball too, you know, whatever it is.
I saw where you threw it to Stephen Brault.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
well,
cool.
I didn't throw the forkball.
Oh, you didn't throw a forkball.
I threw the ball, I couldn't even reach home play with it. Because I hadn't picked up a ball in 10 years at least.
Oh, sure.
And go out there with no. They should have let me throw a little bit to start with.
Sure,
but they didn't. I just went out there cold turkey. And,
wow. And I can't throw
it. It bounced about halfway and it was about that far outside. Brault come walking out with a ball. He said, you want to try another one? I said, okay, get back there. So he got back there and I rolled the ball in.
There was an old timers game that I saw with you and Dick Rote. Bill Mazeroski was in it. Bob Friend was in it. Early Wynn was pitching in it. It was, see if you recall, you went out to pitch, and you threw one pitch, and something went in your arm. And you said, I can't, you know, throw anymore. And they, do you remember that at all?
No, I don't recall.
It was one of those, you know, it was probably back in the 80s or 90s. It was on video. I know.
Maybe down in Washington, D.C.,
Yeah, I believe so. I believe it was Washington.
I think I threw something.
You threw something out, and you said you tried.
Yeah.
You tried a couple of times. You said, I can't do it.
That might have been Washington.
So when was the last time you actually were pitching, like regularly, you know, throwing the ball or, you know?
I'd say in Hawaii.
Hawaii, okay. Well, good. So anyway, in conclusion, I just want to say thank you very much with all the wonderful stories you told us and for participating in the Sabre Oral History Project.
No problem. I'd be happy to do it. But probably didn't give you too much information. I mean, what you wanted, and naming players and all that stuff.
You gave us a lot.
You gave us a lot.
So
I really appreciate it.
We heard some stories we hadn't heard before, and
yeah.
We learned a little more about you. You have a great sense of humor.
We have something for you. If I could get that, Bruce. We have something that we made for you that we'd like for you to have as a token of our visit.
For those cold winter nights.
Oh.
It's just a little lap blanket you put on your, if you're getting cold.
Thank you.
Go Bucks!
Beat them Bucks.
Beat them Bucks.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I wish there was more we could show you to demonstrate our thanks for what you gave us in this game. Thank you. That was great.
I got a little back brace there. Last Tuesday, I was up the BMW, and I'm standing there ready to leave, and I just went down backwards and sit right on my butt. My butt is sore.
It's a sore.
And my back is sore.
Oh, no.
But I don't know why I did it.
It's
the first time I did it. I just went right down like I'm going to sit in this chair like this, only I didn't catch anything. I just went down right and landed right on my butt.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't see it. I don't know if it's black and blue or not, but it's been sore for a week.
Oh, wow.
I was supposed to play golf tomorrow, and I called a guy and told him I can't make it because my back is still bothering me a little bit.
Elroy, I'm telling you, you look great.
You
for 91, my mother,
nobody believes me when I tell them 91.
No, No, they wouldn't.
You're getting along around good.
I wanted to show you one more thing. This is the card I had sent out. I had these made up and I sent them out.
Yeah.
One I sent to Bobby Shantz, and I just wanted you to read the reply he gave me. He declined the interview because I don't think he's doing well. But he said, "Dear Steve, very sorry to decline to do your interview. I really just don't like to do it. I really do appreciate your very nice letter. Maybe I'm just getting too damn old. I'll be 94 in 2 weeks, and believe it or not, I feel really great. I feel like I'm the luckiest guy alive. Sorry to turn you down. Sincerely, Bobby Shantz, oldest living MVP."
Oh.
So.
94, huh?
I'm telling you, that meant a lot to me. I wished I could have interviewed him as well, to get that kind of response, and you turned that right around. You sent that right back to me, and I appreciated that.
Oh, he was so excited. He was so excited when he got your card.
Yeah.
No, Bobby was a good guy.
Yeah.
They should have left him into the series. They took him out.
I know.
Coats in.
in the seventh game, yeah. I was showing Lindy. He was doing good. They brought Coats in.
Yeah. Gave up one hit and they'd take him out and bring Coats in.
Well, he pitched, Bobby pitched five innings relief.
Yeah,
he did good.
Yeah.
He was, I don't know what kind of pitches he had going for him. You pitched with him. What would you say he
was? He mixed them up pretty good and he had good control. He hit spots,
Yeah. But he was like 5'6".
Yeah, he's same size as me. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys were something else. So anyway, that's it.